Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Yad-A and welcome to Native Art Voices of the Four Corners. This is your host, Vinaya Yazzi. Today we have a special guest from the Gallup community, and her name is Mia Sutanto. She is an artist and a poet. How are you doing today, Mia?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm so glad that you could join me today and talk about art and poetry and basically the community of art where you're from and from the Four Corners. I consider Gallup a part of the Four Corners. As long as you're like on the near the reservations, you know, whether it be Navajo, Zuni, Apache, or you know, I figure that's all our community here. So I'll give you a chance to introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us about who you are, Mia.
Sure. So my name is Mia Sutanto, and I'm a 2D digital artist and poet. And I'm from Zuni, New Mexico. I'm half Zuni Pueblo and half Indonesian Chinese, and I currently reside in Gallup.
Okay. So you are a poet from the Gallup and Zuni area. And what kind of art do you focus on? What is your array of your 2D art?
I primarily work with the iPad. Well, growing up, I've always drawn using pencil and paper, but I felt like a natural transition was always digital art for some reason. I would draw my computer, my desktop, and my laptop, and then I had an opportunity to join a 2D digital art apprenticeship with the Zuni Youth Enrichment Project. And that's where they taught us how to draw using Adobe Fresco on iPads and with Apple Pencils. So I was privileged enough to be able to get my own iPad and pencil, and I've just been drawing that and using that feature application ever since. And that's where I mainly do my work, and I also dabble with acrylic and oil painting as well.
Okay, good. Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, Mia's in the younger generation of Native artists in our community. And what I found just by working with people in your age group, Mia, is that a lot of the new Native artists, Indigenous artists, are really interested in digital art, whether it be like what you mentioned, using it from your iPad, and then maybe secondary will be like using actual acrylic paints and, you know, tangible objects such as canvas and paint tubes. And that's just, it's become a normal thing, you know, I notice. And I think that's, you know, of course, it's because your generation is more technologically savvy than my generation. But, you know, you mentioned you use your iPad and then you go into acrylics. How do you decide which one you want to use when you're creating?
Usually, I get an idea and I kind of feel whether or not it's supposed to be more tangible. Usually with art that I want to be more expressive sometimes, I feel like it's hard to replicate that sort of chaoticness with an iPad, you know, because a lot of the paints and the brushes are kind of set to a particular setting, where with paint I'm able to manipulate it better to how I see fit, and that's usually how I begin painting. I have a lot of paints in my sort of area, and I usually just maybe go without an idea, but if it's something more pre-planned as well, I usually go with the iPad, like a more well-thought-out idea.
Yeah, and that sounds about how the process of an artist works, you know. I know that when I see, you know, when I do classes with younger, like high school students or grade school students, I really see how the process of getting ready to do the art is very therapeutic too for them, or it's something new and exciting, right? Because then they have to take out the paints, they have to get their brushes and canvas, set up their space. I think that's a very important part of being an artist too, because it gives you a reason for doing art, you know, not just first you have the idea like you mentioned, but then to go through that whole process of getting ready to do the art, I think it's very important too. What kind of medium do you work in when you work in your tangible art scene?
Like, go ahead.
Do you use acrylics or?
Yeah, I mainly used acrylics, and then I also was able to obtain some oil paint, so sometimes I even mix them, just playing with the texture of both, because, you know, acrylic dries really fast, but oil is almost like a different blend, and the colors sometimes come out in different ways. And then sometimes I don't even use brushes, I just wear gloves and just squeeze tubes on my hands and just spread it. It's different. I think with paint, I kind of just want to play more versus with the iPad. I'm, as an artist, I usually try to be more precise and clean with my lines. Like, I usually find myself gravitating towards more intricate line work versus with painting. Sometimes I just want to splash color on the canvas and not think about it too much, but need more go with the flow and see how it comes out versus waiting for it to come up the layer.
To me, that sounds like expressionism, or, you know, kind of really getting into your mood and the chaos of feeling when you paint. Can you give the audience, the people who are listening, a visual of the content of your art? Where is your art rooted, or what are the things that you paint or create when you do your 2D art?
A lot of my art is inspired by my mixed heritage. Something I sort of came to find out during my art apprenticeship, actually, my teacher just told me that, like, my art was very different because of, you know, even my upbringing. I was raised on the res mostly. I grew up in the Chicago suburbs where, you know, it was barely more diverse compared to a lot of the surrounding cities, but it was predominantly white. And a lot of the times I felt very isolated, you know, being one of the very few Native Americans in my community. If not, you know, my family are probably the only ones. And, you know, there wasn't really any representation for me to follow. I kind of had to figure things out myself. And even being half Chinese, you know, I didn't feel fully accepted by that community either. Because my dad, you know, even though we're of Chinese descent, my family immigrated to Indonesia. So a lot of the culture is more mixed and different. So I kind of just always kept to myself, and, you know, my family always had to teach me certain things that, you know, were kind of different and would make me feel a little more out of place. But over time, I've come to realize how kind of unique my background is and how it's something that I should be proud of. Even as a little kid, I was very proud, but I didn't really know how to express it, you know, other than just talking about it. And, you know, when you're in a surrounding where other people can't relate to you, you don't really know where that can go. But I think as I've come to terms with my identity more now, it comes through more through my art. So a lot of my art, I try to add both Chinese, Indonesian, and Sunni elements. And mix those and maybe present them more in an abstract way than they have been seen. Because, I don't know, like, combining old with the new. Because even going and learning more about Zuni art, you know, during my apprenticeship, that's when I learned a lot more about it. Because growing up, I would see it, but I didn't know a lot about the significance of it or the history. And I'm learning a lot more now. And as I learn, I feel like I'm educated enough to adapt and put that into my art and be able to explain it, you know, to people who have questions or maybe who are trying to figure out the meetings like I was. You know, it's all about education too, which I really emphasize and really prioritize. Excuse me. Yeah, but it's all about education, which is something I really prioritize. And I don't know, I also like just doing ideas that, excuse me. I also like doing ideas that just come to me naturally that may not even have any cultural elements pre-planned into it, but it sort of comes out that way. And I find that's where a lot of my art leans into, whether I'm conscious of it or not.
I'm glad that you are realizing that, you know, what the art you do can educate other people about, like you mentioned, your mixed heritage and identity, you know, mixing old art with new art, or like what some people would say, like traditional art, especially here in the Southwest, with, you know, new ideas. And I think that's a good thing because, you know, all art changes, just like language, art changes, language changes. And so that's how we know people are growing. I know that sometimes people in the Southwest, artist-wise, they find a certain concept or motif and then they stay with it because it sells, you know, it makes money for them, and sometimes that kind of stymies people from growing as an artist. So I've been able to look at your art, Mia, several times. I've seen it, and I noticed you do a lot of figures, representations of women in particular. Yeah. I always remember this one where you have, it's kind of going off of that, I guess, European artist rendition of the girl with the pearl earring. Can you tell us a little bit about that painting and what the title is and maybe what the painting looks like? Because I think that's a very interesting idea in that painting that you did.
Yeah, I did my own rendition. It's a digital oil painting of the classic sort of canon piece in art history, the painting called Girl with the Pearl Earring. It's by Vermeer. I always see that painting, you know, just being online and being, you know, following different art pages is something that would come up, and people always doing their own renditions of it. But I started my own version. It initially wasn't supposed to be a finished piece, actually. I was in my advanced apprenticeship for 2D digital art. And just in between lessons, I would see videos about people talking about doing their own versions of a masterwork, because it really helps, it's supposed to help improve your skills. And I just thought, oh, that'd be, you know, cool. I think it'd be useful. I've never attempted anything like it, to be honest. I've never really tried classical painting style. So I just thought it'd be a fun little side project to try and see if I can do. And then maybe it'll help me understand the light better, because that's something I'm still learning to improve. But yeah, I would just start with her face, and I showed my teacher, and he was pretty impressed with it and told me just to keep going. So I just kept going with it, and I eventually changed some elements. I added, with her scarf, with her headscarf, I added a sort of token scarf design, which is something I see a lot of girls wear out and about. And then I also added Chinese embroidery on her robe, on her sleeve, and then I added a turquoise Zuni-style earring that replaced the pearl. Yeah, that's mainly all the changes I added, and I think it evolved into that because I just wanted it to be something different versus another replication. And it felt like, you know, people wanted, when as I was working on it, it felt like people wanted to see it and almost wanted to see something different. And I've seen people do their own versions of European paintings with like native elements added to that. And I always thought that concept was interesting, just because a lot of the time, you know, I'd been in art history courses in college, and, you know, native art was a very, very small sliver, if anything, involved in the whole curriculum. And it always felt introduced as something that was very, you know, primitive in a sort of, you know, too simplistic art way. It felt introduced as something that wasn't as nuanced as a lot of other concepts compared to European art, which I always felt a little put off by when, you know, being in the apprenticeship, we learned more about how I think my people, specifically Zunis, and even a lot of these other tribes really transformed and innovated abstract art, even. And a lot of European artists like Picasso actually took from that. But yeah, I just felt it was an important way to introduce just this new topic of what is canon art and why is it canon and why don't we have more Indigenous representation. And just the whole exclusion of it felt very, redundant to me. And I just wanted to show that I guess we have a lot of significance too, and we deserve a seat at the table and a place in that conversation. And I just wanted to do something different, especially because it's a digital oil painting too. I know when a lot of people see it, they think it's a real, real oil painting. I have to explain, no, it's digital, and I had it printed on a canvas. Just that concept too, I find it's pretty interesting, something that's a little different than what I guess a lot of people see on the art market too around here. So
yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when I first seen it, I honestly thought it was like an oil painting, you know, but I guess technology can really give you an option to make it look like oil or an acrylic or a watercolor, you know. You know, I think that's really nice how you add the elements of your heritage in there, you know, because really that is indigenizing art, because, you know, we all are human and we can all paint a lady with an earring on, you know, and just happened that Vermeer painted the pearl earring, where, you know, I've seen some artists do that painting and they put a turquoise earring on her, or, you know, maybe a dentalium shell for the other tribal people. So I think that's really great because, you know, people have to remember that, you know, we as contemporary Native Indigenous artists are really telling a narrative about our existence in this time and era. You know, we look at art that our maybe grandparents did, and it's a little bit different content-wise than what we're seeing, you know, young artists like yourself doing. But I think what people should really think about when they look at Native art from this era is that it's a narrative about who we are. It's our identity. It's about our survival. It's about our resilience. It's about who we are now, surviving in a, you know, a society that really didn't want us to be here in the first place, right? But, you know, we as artists, I always tell other artists that, you know, we have a reason for doing what we do in our communities, you know, and it's to continue the story of our resilience, of our survival. And I think you do that in a great way, Mia, because you're really introducing these concepts of mixed ethnicities, and then also the idea of using technology to make these new art pieces. So I think what you're doing is really, really, really good, Mia, and I'm really proud of you. What I wanted to ask you next is, it's kind of along the lines of story and narrative and dialogue of who we are now, but have you ever thought about mixing, you know, your writing, your poetry into your paintings, or do you feel like you want to keep those separate? Maybe tell us a little bit more about what you do as a writer.
Sure. So just your question about mixing. I have tried mixing my art and my poetry together, just maybe mock-ups, because I think when I was in high school, I know a lot of famous poetry books that were coming out were combining art and the poetry, like Milk and Honey, by Lucy Carr, I believe it's her name. But, you know, little doodles became the fashion, you know, paired with the poem. And I tried doing that. I just did that for my last show where I combined my poem, Res Life, with a little sketch of a bubble I did. I don't know. It feels a little foreign, to be honest, combining a little bow, which is pretty interesting considering I consider it is pretty interesting because I consider them to come from the same, you know, source of creativity, but they feel like very separate, you know, the way in which they're created. Where with art, I see images and I may see, a figure or a specific scene or glimpses of it. And then with poetry, it's like I see or hear the words just flow in my mind, and then that's what kind of propels me to write. Unless I just start writing and then it kind of creates itself. But yeah, it's kind of hard for me to combine both of them. But I try because I feel like it's kind of important and they can supplement each other. But as far as that goes, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. No, say that's a good way to put it. They supplement each other because sometimes, you know, I think we as Native artists or people of mixed ethnicities, we have a lot of story to tell, a lot of things to say. And I think it's great when people branch out and kind of mix the two mediums, if you will. So I'm glad to hear that you're interested in that. But what I'd also like to talk to you about, Mia, is your poetry specifically. For those of you listening, Mia was one of the poets that was also chosen to be in the 2023 New Mexico Poetry Anthology, which was just released out of Santa Fe. And she has a poem in there. And can you tell us a little bit about that poem? What's it called? And maybe you might share it with us if you're interested in doing that, Mia.
So the poem is called Res Life. I can actually read it right now if you'd like.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Moving gray hues of a stationary existence, walking side by side, sunset life. Muddy shoes, the stains of the story. My prints unwelcome, stabbed with broken glass. Wrinkled lines of a tragic past, eyes light up at dawn, study the gift of pink glory, pray that it never fades. Yeah, I wrote that actually while I was still in school at UNM. I was an English major and I was also studying chemistry at the same time. Yeah, but I wrote that when I was still a student at UNM. I was studying English and chemistry. And I was taking a creative writing course, and creative writing courses, they typically feel pretty free-flowing, where they just give you a bunch of material to read, or at least in my experience, and they're sort of like, well, what can you take from that? You know, what can you write from that? And for a final, we just had to write three poems, and the first poem I wrote was more stream of consciousness, Virginia Woolf kind of style. I noticed it didn't really people didn't really understand it as much, and I kind of got the impression that maybe I could try something a little shorter, that maybe is more concentrated, that could leave a maybe more impactful impression. So I was like, okay, so I just sat at my computer and I just started thinking about what to write, and immediately I got this image of these people in black and white kind of setting, just walking. And it kind of made me think about how a lot of tribes are forced to, you know, leave their homes, have to leave and go into different territories that they aren't familiar with. I don't know, I just contrasted that with people just walking along the highways on my reservation, just being curious about that. And I kind of just started writing and all the colors I saw, and it eventually evolved into that poem, just three sections, pretty naturally. I just kind of went with it. I usually like to section off poems sometimes, but not all the time, and I finally finished it. But for each stanza, yeah, it kind of feels like past, present, and future, where the first part is I'm thinking more about the effects of intergenerational trauma and our history and how that all relates. Because to me, you know, trauma is something that can't necessarily be destroyed, but like energy, it has to be transformed. And I think a lot of people have responsibility or don't know that they have the power to transform it. I just thought about that contrast with now. And then the present is more about how all that trauma affected me personally, or affects the youth or a lot of the younger generation, how, you know, the actions from before, you know, reverberate and don't really go away. Your body feels it, your body remembers everything you go through, whether you're aware of it or not. And then I think the last part is more about the future and hope. You know, despite how sad it may sound, and I just picture it like my grandma. You know, everyone, all the elderly people in my community get up so early, and they love just, you know, having time to themselves and looking outside and just spending time outside. So I just thought about my grandma, like, waking up really early. You know, the sun's barely rising, and sometimes all pink outside, and thinking about her going outside and just looking, you know, and just standing. Sorry, I'm getting all emotional. But just thinking about how beautiful it all looks, and how it's going to look in the future, you know, grandkids and stuff like that. Just kind of sad about maybe her time ending, but also happy that there's going to be a new beginning, you know, and then just thinking about how that's going to be implemented in our youth and how they're not going to continue whatever cycles are holding them back or has held their previous generation.
Yeah, that's a really profound reflection, Mia, because we do really have to realize that, you know, times change and people in our family leave us, but, you know, they leave a legacy for us to continue. And it sounds like that's what you're doing, because you're very observant about your community and your elders, and you're knowing that, you know, there is going to be a continuance of whether it be our arts or just our simple ways of life. Like you said, elders waking up early, you know, I think in any community you go to around the world, elders are always awake before we get up. And yeah, there's something so assuring about that. You know, I remember, you know, myself always hearing my grandfather in the morning, and he was really loud, you know, but he was awake, right? And just waking up to hearing him in the kitchen or in the front room was just so soothing for the soul. And I think memories of our childhood and what we've been through are part of this generational trauma that I believe too that we carry as modern Native people. But I guess for us, it's moving on from that and knowing that, you know, we acknowledge it, but then we say, yes, that happened to us, but we need to have hope because our grandparents had hope and they moved on. And so we kind of continue that legacy of survival. Again, that word comes up. I think it's really great that you're writing. And I would tell you, continue writing, because we need more Native writers. We need more Native women writers from our community. So continue writing, because what you're writing is very brilliant, and I want to congratulate you for being in the new poetry anthology, because you represent our state of New Mexico, which is the most wonderful place in the world. So I'm glad you're in it, Mia, and I'm really thankful that you shared a little bit of your art, a little bit of your writing, and, you know, who you are as an artist in our community. And I really look forward to seeing more of your art and connecting with you more in the community. Can you give the audience, I don't know, any details about where they can find your art or see what you're doing, maybe on social media?
I'm probably most active on my social media, on Instagram, at PoseYourPasta. That's where I usually post progress of what I'm doing and also my art. It's kind of tricky posting art on Instagram now because you hear a lot of people kind of taking it and manipulating it. So I'm still trying to figure out how to post more of it in the way in which I feel most comfortable, but that's probably going to catch me the most, and I have to post where I'm going to be at and different shows I'm going to be at.
Okay, good. Well, that's the best place to start. Thank you for showing us what you do show us, Mia, and I look forward to all the things that you're going to do in the future. So thank you for sharing a little bit of time with us, Mia, and I wish you a great week. And until next time, we will talk to you again.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Native Art Voices of the Four Corners. Hagoanat.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.